Hello everybody, I'm your host Hal Curtis, and I'd like to welcome you to The Space Industry by SatSearch, where we share stories about the companies taking us into orbit. In this podcast, we delve into the opinions and expertise of the people behind the commercial space organizations of today, who could become the household names of tomorrow. Before we get started with the episode, remember you can find out more information about the suppliers, products, and innovations that are mentioned in this discussion on the Global Marketplace for Space at satsearch.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Space Industry Podcast by SatSearch. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for being here with us wherever you are in the world today. Now, there's lots going on in the space industry at the moment, as I'm sure you're aware. The new missions, new launch vehicles being tried out, old launch vehicles being used time and time again, technologies being tested for the first time or scaling up as they've proven themselves in space. But today we're going to take a step back from that and look at some of the stories behind the press releases that get so much airtime. And instead, we're going to take a look at the supply chain itself, which is our bread and butter at SatSearch, but is really the backbone of any company that's serious about building a reliable and consistent business offering. So my guest today is Paolo Mori, procurement specialist at space logistics company D-Orbit. Very excited to speak to Paolo and find out more about D-Orbit's supply chain and the approaches and what they're working on at the company. So Paolo, thank you very much for being here with us on the podcast today.
Thanks, Howell. Thanks for this warm introduction. I'm very pleased to be here with you. I'm very excited to have a chat about space industry and the supply chain.
Fantastic. Great. Okay, first up, could you set the scene for the listeners here today by giving us a bit of an overview of your personal background and your current work at D-Orbit?
Yes, sure. It's my pleasure. So I would start saying that space has represented for me a big passion since I was a little child. Remembering being really passionate about solar system when I was a little kid. And probably this passion was boosted by the fact that Paolo Nespoli, an Italian astronaut that you may know, was born in my hometown. Basically, I was really following his missions to space with the space shuttle, with Soyuz. And it was pretty great. And this boosted my passion a lot. So when I arrived in high school, I had my idea pretty cleared. And I wanted to work in the space industry and put my hands on something that would have flown to space. Actually, my dream back in the days was becoming an astronaut. But then, of course, you grow up and you also have to find some alternatives. And so this is why then I decided to enroll into Politecnico di Milano, and I took my degrees there, my Bachelor of Science and my Master of Science in Space Engineering. Pretty glad that there was such an important university close to my house that allowed me to study what I love. But during my studies, I realized that, I like the technical stuff and I love like studying them. But in the end, I wanted to discover more about the industry. So this is why I decided to write my thesis and do my thesis project in the industry. Also because, I wanted to start my career as a professional in the industry, and I thought that the thesis could be the bridge between the college and the space industry. So this is why, with the support of a professor from Politecnico di Milano, I started writing my thesis in D-Orbit. And I was actually very enthusiastic about it because I was discovering a new company, a new world for me. And then D-Orbit came with the opportunity of joining the procurement team. So let's say that, of course, maybe this is not the straightest choice, the straightest option for a graduate in space engineering. But in the end, I wanted to find something both technical and also more commercial, also entailing some other part of the business. I accepted. And I needed a little bit, of course, to adapt to the new position, to the new work. Yeah, because it was my first working experience. And I actually had to understand the work I was doing, how the company was working itself. And how could I impact the company? And in the end, I wanted to learn about this experience. And so I took several months of learning. And I guess there was a turning point, because at a point, D-Orbit got a contract for an Earth observation platform, which is in the context of the Italian PNRR, which is the resilience post-pandemic plan. And I started working on that program as a procurement specialist. And this is also my main activity now. So I'm basically focus on procuring everything which is mounted on the spacecraft, on this spacecraft, apart from the payload, which is developed and built by a partner. But yes, if you think at all the equipment that is on a spacecraft, I need to do all the procurement activities related to procure these products and services. So we are talking about flight systems such as reaction wheels, solar panels, star trackers, propulsion, etc. The part of the avionics, all the, let's say, everything related to PCB and PCB assembly and components procurement. Of course, machined parts and composites. And beside this, also all the testing and the services related to the spacecraft and supporting also the engineers that are working on the testing, the models and the platform. Let's say that, as you can imagine, of course, purchasing is one of the main activity which is involved in the job of a procurement specialist, but is just one of many, because actually there is also the management of the bid or RFQ processes, the vendors management. You have really to build the relationship with the suppliers. You have to scouting the right technology also in line with what is requested by your engineering department. And you really need also to have a lot of interfaces. What I loved about, what I'm loving about this work is that you're not really focused on one thing, but you have a lot of interfaces with the internal customers, with suppliers. So I'm talking about the engineering department, the program managers, the quality, the production. And there are also a lot of skills that are put on the table, such as negotiating skills. Of course, when you have to negotiate skills with the suppliers, you really need to organize the workload and a lot of teamwork, everything like this. I have to say it's challenging, but definitely very stimulating, and I am enthusiastic about this.
Excellent. Oh, thank you very much. That's a great introduction to the conversation. And yeah, obviously, as you mentioned, just understanding what to begin looking at procuring in those areas is a real specialist job, let alone carrying it through, as you say, supporting the engineering team, all those sorts of things. It requires, for what you're working on at your bit, yeah, requires a lot of technical knowledge and a lot of the interpersonal people skills and interfacing that you mentioned this. Thank you for that. That's great. Now, so as you mentioned, there's a lot of different systems, subsystems, components, et cetera, that you're involved in or in charge of sourcing. And the industry, most industries have obviously been experiencing some sort of supply chain issues over the last few years. I wondered what, if you could share with us, what sort of technologies or services are currently causing the longest delays in your development timescales? Which have the longest lead times maybe to get delivered or to create?
Yes, sure. Let me start by saying that lead time is actually a pretty big concept. And I want to remark this because I think that in many occasions it's happened to me that I verified that with lead times, colleagues or other people just thought about production times. But production times is just a part of this. Production time is just the top of the iceberg of a lead time, but there are actually many different variables which are impacting the lead time itself. And just, I want to make this because it's really difficult to generalize and say, okay, these items are long lead items. It really depends by a lot of things. Then, of course, you can find some trends in the industry, and I will arrive at this point. But in general, lead time is defined by also the procurement of the raw materials, because many times it's granted, we take for granted that the material is in the warehouse of our suppliers, which is not like this. Or you have to consider the occupation of the production lines and the market demand. Generally, this goes together because as far as there is a lot of market requests for a product, the lines are occupied and lead times can become larger and larger. On the other side, as you were mentioning, there could be disruption in the supply chain, which can be generated by geopolitical dynamics. We are experiencing pretty much of this nowadays. And but also, like when you start a project, it depends also on the level of customization that you need on the product. So if you talk about off-the-shelf products, you're talking about one thing. If you are putting some more level of engineering, this need, of course, a co-engineering phase where you have to face the challenges given by the technology development. And you have also to deal with the suppliers prioritizing other bigger customers. So all of these are just dynamics that, in my opinion, are worth to mention in this context. It happened to me just recently, a couple of days ago. I was talking with a colleague and there was a specific product that like in these days, it's like 8 weeks of lead time. But just a couple of months ago, it was 4 months. So yeah, you can see that it's not straight to find a common line. But in the end, I think that from my experience, what can I say is that for sure, flight systems and the electromechanical system have the longest lead times. We can arrive to even more than 1 year, 1 year and a half, let's say. I think that this is related to the fact that these are pretty complex. There are a lot of components, a lot of parts that need to be assembled. There is hardware, software, there is electronic components, mechanical parts. Then you have to assembly, test them, and it's quite a long process. So there are a lot of things, let's say, that can become an obstacle during the assembly of these systems. And as a second component or product that I would mention are solar cells. Solar cells recently was actually crazy because the lead time to have solar cell was more than 1 year, while in the past it happened also to be like five, 6 months. And this is in line with problems related to market demand, because as you were mentioning, the space industry is growing a lot. And many of, let's say, almost all the mission that fly to space are in a low Earth orbit. And so they will make use of solar cells. And so there are a lot of demand, but the suppliers are not proportioned to satisfy this demand. And so solar cells, it is a problem now. I'm happy to hear that some companies are investing to extend their production lines, which is good news. And finally, one last thing is about Tripoli components, so electronic components. This is a pretty peculiar market because many industries are involved in the procurement of the electronic components. So not only the space industries, but also automotive, medical, industrial, etc. And the problem here is that you have a few companies that are so big and they have so much power that when they release a purchase order, there is a huge shortage on some components. And of course, if you need to assembly boards, etc., it's not good for you, let's say. But at the moment, when they are not putting in any purchase order, the market condition is way more relaxed. And yeah, then related to this fact is that is pretty dependent on geopolitical condition on the Eastern world. I would say that these three are products that you will find some challenge if you want to procure them.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you. Thank you for being candid with us about it. Like I say, for us at Satsu, solving supply chain issues, helping people source components, find new alternative suppliers is what we do day in, day out. And I can definitely agree with you on the areas you've covered. Triple E components, yeah, the order volumes are just not there in space compared to other industries, like you've said. So it's just natural. And obviously only certain components have the relevant radiation protection and the functionality that you need in space. And on the solar cells, definitely it's a problem we help companies with on a very regular basis. We actually published an article the middle of last year about the bottlenecks in the solar cell supply chain and where there are things that could be solved. Yeah, it's common. These issues are common across the industry, which is, evidence of a real commercial market, but albeit one that is growing and maturing. So following on to that, we mentioned areas where there are long delays in lead time. Oh, I also wanted to say thank you very much for spelling out for people what lead time really is, the different factors that really play into that. But yeah, we looked at those sort of areas. Now, what subsystems or components do you use at the orbit for which there aren't a lot of supplier options in the market? And then you have a classic supply and demand problem, or things that are particularly expensive. And I wondered if you could elaborate on maybe why this is and where you'd, as a procurer, as a purchaser of those sorts of components, where would you like to see some innovation come to the market?
I would say that it all comes down to the maturity of the industry, because in the end, I think that in the last years, with the advent of the new space industry, a lot of new companies arrived on the market. And so, for example, you can find several suppliers also of a space flight system also in Europe, while I think that maybe 10 years ago, it was not so straight. Coming back, to your question, I think that, for example, as I was mentioning before, electromechanism, so starting from rotary joints, slip rings, but also more complex systems such as pointing mechanism, etc. I guess these are not easy to find on the market. But this is really related also to the maturity of the industry and related to the fact that these are complex system, and when you are purchasing them, you want them to be space qualified, you want them to be like space flown. So you want, since they are complex and sometimes they even represent a single point of failure, you really need some assurance that they will fly properly and they will perform. So it's not easy to come on the market and sell some of this system. This is why these systems are mainly sell by big names of the market. So it's not that you cannot find them. You can find them, but these are, provided by big names, and generally those are very expensive. Also because, as I was mentioning previously, they are an assembly of many different components, and you really need high level of quality. But I think that at the moment I see that there are some companies that are working on this in the industry. So I'm pretty optimistic that in a few years there will be someone that can cover this problem, let's say. Further than this, I would say that tanks, specifically in terms of bladder tanks and COPVs, which are the composite pressure vessels. So let's say that composite vessels is a pretty recent production technique, which is extremely advantageous in terms of weight saving. To come with specific requirements, it's not easy to find support you in the development and production of these. There are, I had a conversation with some, but there are not too many, let's say. And you're really challenging both the engineering and the production. Then, of course, if there are off-the-shelf tanks that they have already been studying them and produced is different. But here I'm talking about producing a COPV based on your specific requirement. And also bladder tanks. So this was actually a little bit surprising for me. But after having an assessment of the market, I could say that there are not so many companies having flight heritage and space qualified bladder tanks. And right now, the lead time for this is pretty crazy. I guess it arrived around one year and a half on average. And I think that this is related to the fact that back in these days, but also in the past, the growth of the demand was pretty intense, and the supply chain is not proportioned to the request. And finally, as a last point, I would mention again solar cells, because I told you that there aren't many suppliers on the market that are selling space qualified product. And I think that there is margin to introduce some innovation here, because currently the most used type of cells are the triple junction solar cells. But these are not very, let's say, economic, because it's like you're around 100 euros per produced watt. And I think that there might be space in the future to introduce innovations such as perovskite cells or other kind of innovation. Right now, like the volume of the request of the solar cell is really increasing a lot. Also, if you can imagine all the constellations and all the satellites that will be launched in the next few years. So I think that having some more suppliers and new technologies for solar cells would be really helpful for the industry.
Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely agree. And obviously, when we talk about innovation on the supply side of the industry, now innovation can be, I think, was what you're alluding to with the solar cells. Okay, there are these new materials like perovskites, etc. But the innovation is possible to be generated in the manufacturing process itself. And if we're seeing advances that can reduce the cost and the lead time of production, then what you're signaling is that there is the demand there in the industry. So I think this is great information. Thank you. Now, so on that, on the way that suppliers can approach the market, etc., you mentioned in your introduction that the interfacing that you have with suppliers and the need to build relationships with them. This is really important. And we've discussed this on previous podcasts as well with companies. So I wondered if you could give the audience some pointers, the suppliers in the audience, some pointers on how they could improve their approaches working with an upstream customer like yourself. And maybe I don't want you to name any names, call anybody out, but if you could share some of the kind of frustrating behaviors and or give us some examples of companies that do things really well.
Yes, I think that when you're approaching a complex project, such as the one involved into our industry, a big factor is the empathy that is generated between the people involved in the commercial deal. I really worked a lot, also my team works a lot, my colleagues, to build the right empathy with the suppliers, because this creates the right working condition, and that within the project, if you have an empathetic relationship, you can discuss every problem. I felt in a couple of experiences I had that the suppliers were lacking a little bit of transparency, and therefore the empathy was not as I wanted to be. Lack of transparency, I mean that maybe in phase of queue, there was some of the problems were hide. Of course, when I sat down on the negotiating table, I know that my request could be challenging in terms of schedule or engineering, but at the same time, I'm expecting that on the other side, the problems will come out and we can discuss about these. It happened a couple of times that also a project with 1 year lead time during the project seems to be pretty smooth. Everything seems to be pretty smooth, but in the end, when it comes to deliver, they start accumulating delays, etc. And I think this is bad because, again, right now, but I guess in general, the conditions of the market are pretty strict. And so we are all on a budget. We have whole deadlines. And so I think that being on the same line and being transparent is really an important characteristic. Also because, again, right now it's really hard to pretend to have a deal in one direction with one of the two guys involved that is winning. Nowadays, you really need to trade off and go on with the win solutions. So I think that in order to reach this kind of trade-offs and solutions, you really need to be on the same line and create a really good communication channel. So yeah, for sure, when it comes to have lack of transparency, meaning that suppliers are trying not to be clear on delays, or they are hiding the impossibility to guarantee desired technological performance, they are not clear about the times. I think that this is, of course, not much appreciated. On the other end, I really like the fact that some suppliers really try to establish a good communication, be empathetic with you. And also, I really appreciate the possibility to go to the supplier touring sites or to visit them during expos and fairs, because in the end, you see each other face to face, or either you take a coffee with them and you just talk about what you're doing in your company. You give visibility about future potential deal. At the same time, they are more open to you. And this really helps to build the relations. And yeah, I think this should not be underestimated, because it is a very important point to keep in mind if you want to have successful deals, from what I can tell from my experience, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes complete sense, then gives you the opportunity to ensure that honesty and communication is there both ways, as you mentioned, because if you're hoping that a supplier will be able to scale up or change to meet your requirements at different times, then making them prepared and aware of that potential opportunities in the future is very important. But they'll only get that information from you if you're sitting down with them and if you're open about the status and the plans of the company. And yeah, thank you for the other advice and that suppliers can follow. Hopefully there's plenty of companies out there listening to this who will take this on board and look at their approaches to how they're approaching the supply and the chain and how they're dealing with customers, what they can do better. So thank you for that. I think we've covered everything that I was interested in on the supply chain side of things, Paolo. So I really appreciate you giving us these insights today and sharing your knowledge with the listeners. Finally, I wanted to ask you what you are most excited about working on at D-Orbit over the next few years.
I am pretty excited about what the future holds, to be honest. And I would say that this is true on different levels. First of all, in terms of the programs I'm working on, you're putting in many efforts. Of course, I'm not talking only by myself, but all the teams or all the colleagues, the management. You're really putting in a lot of efforts, and you want the results to be delivered. So I guess that I'm pretty excited about the fact that I would like to see the platform I'm working on to fly to space and reach the goal of the mission. So right now we have some nice challenges ahead because we will be testing the STM, and then there will be all the things related to the procurement, to assembly the flight model, and then you will have the launch campaign. Many challenges, but again, I'm sure there will be a lot of workload, a lot of pressure at some point, a lot of responsibilities. But this is what you're excited about, working every day on a project. You just want it to be successful. And the evolution of the programs at which I'm working, I think they are really an important part of my enthusiasm at the moment. But for sure, one other thing is related to the company, is the company perspective, because the Orbit, as you may know, is a really a fast evolving and growing company. When I first joined the company back in 2021, I think we were something like 100 people, while right now we are touching almost 300 employees on all the team in Italy, Portugal, UK, and US. Yeah, so as you can see, we are growing a lot. And in terms of growth, we are not growing all in terms of number, but also in terms of programs we are working with. We are start working in some institutional programs, and also we are attracting a lot of people. So is also good that you have the opportunity to work with really talented and passionate people. I really love the fact that you can develop the relationship and also work with. Yeah, I think that there are a lot of aspects to be happy in the company. Of course, when you're growing so much, there is a lot of work to do, as you can imagine, in terms of company growing, in terms of process people, in terms of teams development. I think this is also good because since I started my career in this company, I'm basically growing with the company, which is something that could be considered romantic, let's say. And then, yeah, also on my personal growth, because I started in the Orbit that I was a graduate in space engineering. Now I am acquiring much knowledge, much expertise. I'm having the opportunity to work closely to utilize platforms and programs. And in the end, we are really stimulated also by the possibility to step up as a professional and make your career progress. And I think that at the moment, the Orbit is giving me many opportunities in this sense. And one last thing to mention is that I'm not enthusiastic about only being in the Orbit, but also in the space industry. Because when I go to the fairs, to the expos, to the suppliers, I really see the momentum that the industry is gaining. I can see that, of course, the industry, as we were mentioning, is pretty recent, at least the commercial one, the commercial part of the space business. And there are a lot of new companies with interesting ideas that are doing very well. So I'm pretty excited to see what the future will hold with all the new technology and see what will happen in low Earth orbit, geostationary orbit, lunar mission. So we are like seeing what SpaceX is doing at the moment, and probably something crazy if you can think about it. But in the end, there are a lot of companies that are working really hard to increase the space accessibility and to put new technologies on the market. So I think that in general, being in the space industry now is very stimulating.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Paolo. That's great. That's a really nice place to wrap up. Yeah, thoroughly agree with you. The amount of both skilled and passionate people that the space industry is able to attract, despite being, as you say, so relatively new, relatively small compared to other industrial industries, is just phenomenal. So really, yeah, really pleased to see that. And just wanted to say thank you very much for sharing all of these insights and stories from inside the Orbit, inside the company with us today. Sharing your insights, I think, is really useful for anybody in the industry, wherever they happen to be in the supply chain, whether they're potential suppliers, potential buyers. This is B2B, so everybody is somebody's customer at the end of the day. And I think the knowledge that you've shared can really help everybody improve their supply chain approaches. Yeah, wanted to say thank you very much from me and from all on behalf of all our listeners today.
Yeah, thanks, Howell. It was really a pleasure being here, and I hope that the listeners enjoyed our conversations today. Thank you very much.
Great, thank you. And to all our listeners out there, thank you too for spending your time with us today on the Space Industry Podcast. We'll share some information about D-Orbit in the show notes for this episode, a name that I'm sure you are familiar with in any case, but we'll share some links and things where you can find out more and see what the company's doing and all of the work that supply chain people like Paolo is coming into the market, coming into the industry. thank you very much for spending time with us, and please stay with us for the next episode of the Space Industry Podcast when it is published. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Space Industry by SatSearch. I hope you enjoyed today's story about one of the companies taking us into orbit. We'll be back soon with more in-depth, behind-the-scenes insights from private space businesses. In the meantime, you can go to satsearch.com for more information on the space industry today, or find us on social media if you have any questions or comments. To stay up to date, please subscribe to our weekly newsletter, and you can also get each podcast on demand on iTunes, Spotify, the Google Play Store, or whichever podcast service you typically use.